You got to fit.
Yeah.
Even if you're the best at what you do and we could make so much money selling you or the way you sell your stuff or do your things, if you're toxic or if you're unreliable or if you're not capable of like growing other folks, it's going to be a very short engagement.
Okay. Julie, welcome to the Pressure Tested Podcast. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Thanks. I'm so honored to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come over here and just be a part of this. So I want to jump right in and I want to hear about your career progression. So take me all the way back to undergrad and tell me how you went from undergrad to CEO.
That is, it's not a linear story, but I actually have my undergraduate degree in psychology and Spanish. Super marketable. People were fighting for me when I got out of college, as you can imagine. So I went to work in psychiatry research for like $17,000 a year. And so I got to wait tables on the side to help make rent. But I did that for a few years. And I realized I wasn't sure I wanted to commit to that. And I went to TD Industries. And so my family has a long history with TD Industries. My granddad started that company in 1946.
I didn't know that.
My granddad started that in 1946. And my dad was actually the CEO at the time when I went there. So you know what that means, is you have to work twice as hard to look like you're even worth, you know, paying attention to. So, but it was a great experience. TD is a great place to learn and grow, which I imagine Moss is also, because they will give you opportunities to participate in a healthcare committee, a culture committee. You know, I moved from HR to project management, and I didn't have to, you know, have a construction management degree to do that. And so what I appreciate was the organization sort of had its eye on your commitment and your willingness to, you know, get in there and do the work. And then they gave you opportunity for that. And so people from all ranks were coming in and out of the field. You could be a foreman and then you could go into coordination. You could be in payroll. You can go into project management. It wasn't just these linear paths of construction managers become project managers and other people do other things. And so it was just a great learning ground. I learned a ton. And while I was there, I was on a project for Raytheon, and a company called Meiser and Wurst had designed the project. TD Industries got the job to build it. And so I'm sitting in a little job site trailer in a parking lot next to the project manager of Meiser and Wurst, who, 3 years later became my husband. So that's where we met. It was a little hard hat romance. And so anyways, after that, you know, I still worked at TD until we had our first kid, and Matt had started an engineering company, and because he's a mechanical engineer, and he always has had an entrepreneurial bug, which I do not. I'm very much of an operator. And but after we had our first son, you know, I couldn't do project management work. It was just too demanding. It was like 60 hours a week, constant on call. In case something went wrong, you had to show up. And I didn't have the energy for it. It just didn't seem like the right idea with an infant at home. So I moved over to the company that he started, which was called Class One Solutions. So back in the day, the best clean room you could build was a Class One clean room. Anyways, I was just doing whatever, admin, ops, books, insurance, payroll, you name it, just all those things. And then some of our engineering clients said, why don't you build what you design? We'd like a turnkey provider.
Okay.
And that was sort of where my experience at TD came in. And so we started a second company. It's called C1S Group. And so that was the construction arm of this. Class One Solutions was engineering. C1S Group was construction. And after, you know, running two companies for a while and all the ridiculous accounting back and forth and sharing of resources, we just like, forget it. Let's just make it one company. And thankfully, you know, sort of high trust, high accountability with our marriage, Matt was like, we can just make it a women-owned company and all my folks will fold in under you. And so here we are. So we're a women-owned engineering and construction company. Been in business for 25 years. And, you know, we have about 52 employees right now and just growing, you know, pretty steadily, pretty organically, you know, no debt.
That's amazing.
It's not been smooth always. You know, there have been some tough years, but it's been a wonderful experiment that I never would have done if Matt wasn't an entrepreneur, because like I said, I'm an operator. So he's off coming up with the big ideas and I'm like, hang on, we got to pay for that.
And so that's sort of how we balance each other out.
Man, that's amazing. So tell me a little bit about C1S. What kind of projects do you do? And you can even, you know, maybe mention a project that you're really proud of, so I know kind of exactly what it looks like.
Sure. So most of our work historically has been in sort of the critical environment and manufacturing spaces.
Okay.
So Matt, being a mechanical engineer with a specialty in clean rooms, he was doing semiconductor.
What's a clean room?
So a clean room, like semiconductor rooms, you know, where they're making these semiconductors. And a clean room means that in a given square foot of air, there's so many microscopic particles. So the cleanest clean room used to be called a class one. It's now called ISO something. And it has one particle at 0.99995 microns per cubic foot of air. So that means the whole ceiling is filtration. And it comes through a HEPA filter, and it comes down through the space. The floor is perforated, and it pulls the air down and out the sides where it gets cleaned and pushed back through.
Wow.
And so when you're in a clean room, you're all smocked up. You know, you've seen those people with their head to toe smocked up, and you're writing with special pens, and you have cotton bond paper, and you do all these things because even the tiniest little particle will wreck, you know, $1 million worth of product if they're moving semiconductor wafers through this space.
Wow. Okay.
And so those clients will tell you over and over again, if you wreck a batch, that's on you. And also, we're operating while they're operating and making product while we're in there. So if you shut us down, that's $1 million every 5 minutes. And so you're like, let's be super careful, y'all. Let's not do anything to disrupt the process. And so our work has been a lot in those spaces.
Okay.
And it's not super glamorous, right? We have some folks come to interview and they're like, I want to build the Bush Presidential Museum, and I want to build a Cowboys ballpark or something. I'm like, sorry, man, your grandmother's never going to see this work.
She's not going to
drive by here and be like, oh, my son designed the HVAC for a room where the air comes down in circles. You know, it's just grittier. It's a lot of collaboration and coordination and very, very tight execution when these facilities are running. And so it's just problem solving. It's just high intense problem solving around mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems. And that's been our history. Now we do more new construction. Now we've done schools and we've done some commercial. We did the bomb factory downtown.
Okay, cool.
That was crazy. those people, you know, people who own bars and like concert venues are like vampires. So we start at 6 a.m. and they show up about 4 p.m. and they want to do shots before we start talking. And I was like, no, friend, that's safety. We don't drink on the job. And so it was a whole new world for us. And we're like, where's the hard hat protocol in this place? You know, everybody's just walking around in flip-flops. And we're just, it was a nail biter. And it was so crazy. And that's not our typical world, but it was a really fun job to kind of hang our hat on. But, you know, our most challenging work really happens sort of behind the scenes. And having a client say, I pick C1S because I don't worry. One of our clients said, you guys just sell sleep. I know if you're in my facility that nothing's going to go wrong.
Man.
I know if it does go wrong or there's an issue, you're going to tell me before I find out. I know that you guys are very, very good at working in this space, and not a lot of folks are. You may not be the cheapest, but you're the best. And so to us, you know, have you ever like built a house or remodeled a house or something, right? You may love your house when you're done, but you may not love your builder.
No.
Because it can be a real painful process.
Yep.
We tell our project managers they got to love their house and their builder.
Yep.
And so it's just a real high-touch client service, very technical world. And so, and it's suited to design build because, you know, speed is important. And design build lets you, you know, you can get 40% through design, pick your long lead equipment, get that stuff coming, and then you finish up the rest of the design while construction starts doing pre-planning and demo and whatever
else. That's crazy. Okay, so part of your company designs these complicated projects, and then you go and install these complicated projects, but then you also have some of your revenue going to like traditional new construction stuff, schools. So at what point did you decide that, you know, you wanted to get into that other work?
It got to where, we wanted to grow.
Okay.
And those renovation jobs that were in this manufacturing industrial space, they're great. They were, you know, the margins are great, but they were $2 and $3 million a pop. And that's fine. It's great work. And yeah, we are very, very good at it. So that will always be a core piece of our business. But if you wanted to be like a construction company, our goal is to be 100 million in okay. 5 years.
Okay.
And so we just can't stack up, you know, 23 million jobs a year. You know, it's just too intense.
Got
you
it.
Need some 5, 10, 15, 20s in there that have just good, steady production and backlog, and they're great work, and we know what we're doing. The margin structure is different, but it's great work, and we're working with really cool clients. And so that's sort of part of our growth strategy, was getting larger projects that had longer durations, not $3 million over 4 months.
So still part of your growth strategy. How do you work towards that? I feel like construction is just, there's a lot of players in the market. So how do you continue to grow that side of the business?
Yeah, we, like you guys, like y'all have a great reputation, and people ask for you by name because of how you do what you've done. And so our growth has been largely organic to date, but really we are finding, to get to that next level, we got to show up in places that we haven't been before. We typically, we don't do a lot of hard bid, like, you know, sealed envelope municipal work.
Oh, yeah.
But it's we're not opposed to it, right?
Sure.
We're getting to a place, and our resume is big enough to where we can show up in those spaces and be competitive. Whereas before, you know, we just, our blend of work and our project cycles just didn't lend us to be competitive in those spaces. So
we're showing up now in more life sciences arenas, trying to get
some work in different markets, not just manufacturing, but like life sciences, some education, you know.
Okay.
You think about schools doing a renovation, the summer is like a big shutdown.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's a 3-month shutdown. That's what we do great. A lot of heavy collaboration, coordination, planning it out and phasing. And then you get turned loose to do a thing, and you've got to hit all these markers to make it turn on by, you know, August 10th when everybody shows back up. So that's a natural progression. So just kind of some transferable skills, trying to find new markets to kind of see if we can be competitive in.
So what's really interesting about what you guys do is, you know, and I'm definitely not downplaying what we do in utilities, because what we do in utilities, there's a lot to it. But I just feel like it's so important to choose the right people to do what you guys do, and then be able to trust those people. And so I read this article about you, and it said that you kind of refer to yourself as the chief people officer. What does that mean? And like, what are you trying to create with that?
You know, I grew up around TD Industries, which was the greatest example. And they have a philosophy of servant leadership. And servant leadership just means, do the people that work for you, are they better at what they do because of you? Are they more able to be more independent and more capable because you are there? And so it's really, for us, we don't sell a product. We're general contractors. We don't even get to, you know, mark up equipment, right? So all of our money comes from our people, their expertise, their ability to communicate, their ability to commit, their ability to care, take on our clients' problems and make them their own. And so for us, the people are just the heart of the business. And so getting the right people, you know, we talk about this in Traction, our PRS, right? Right person in the right seat.
Yep.
And for us, a big piece of the right people is just sort of our core values. And, you know, our core values are real, being honest, self-propelled, don't wait to be told. If you see a problem, solve it.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Make it happen, which is be resourceful and creative. Walk or talk, which is be dependable and good for it, even when it's bad. Speak up. And then work hard, play hard, which is, you know, life's too short. This work is stressful. And we want to make sure, you know, one of our big goals is that our people are thriving, not just working, they're thriving. And that is just a whole life thing. And so we work hard at attracting great people who are technically capable in our space, obviously, but also who have a heart for doing work the way we do it. And so putting those two things together, we spend a lot of time on the fit. And I know you do too, your organization.
We do.
And I've seen some of Garrett's stuff and seen your work and your podcasts and your conversations. You got to fit.
Yeah.
Even if you're the best at what you do, and we could make so much money selling you or the way you sell your stuff or do your things, if you're toxic, or if you're unreliable, or if you're not capable of like growing other folks, it's going to be a very short engagement.
Okay, that's a great question. So let's say that you hire somebody, you have great hopes for them,
and you know, 2 months in, have figured out that these people are detractors and that they are taking away from your business, are you kind of slow to hire, quick to fire? Like, how do you go about that?
That's what we want to be. and we are typically slow to hire. We don't do that, you know, without a whole lot of thought and people buying in. It's the letting go part.
Yeah.
Because we tend to have quite a bit of faith in humanity and what we thought we were getting when we got them, we hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
But we make mistakes in that. And sometimes we take too long to be decisive in writing it. And it's not because they're terrible people. I'm not just talking about, like, you know, thieves and criminals. We hire great folks who just aren't a fit, or they just don't have the commitment, or they just can't deliver at our speed. Doesn't mean there's not a great place for them, and we're certainly not doing them a service by continually telling them they're not quite meeting the mark. The better thing to do is to let them go with all the confidence and strength that there's a better place for them.
Yeah.
But we stub our toes at that.
Yeah, I think everybody does. I know that we do. That's just a common thing to really struggle with. So you mentioned traction.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are both big EOS fans. How do you think that traction has kind of helped you shape your business?
You know, it's we started Traction in 2013, and it's really, it's just so simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's so simple and basic and foundational, and it doesn't let the system is not complicated, nor is it onerous. So it has helped us not chase strategies or ways of doing things that are sort of leadership du jour. It's not a new way to do strategic planning. It's not a, hey, this year we're gonna do something totally different with our performance management. You can spend so much of your professional capital chasing the next thing that came out in whatever journal, or you saw it in a podcast, or you heard it at a conference. You can just be such a chaser, and that is like a detractor. It's taking away energy.
Yep.
And this business is hard, and especially when you're starting up, and there's 1,000 different ways to go and 1,000 different things to focus on. And if you try to do that, you know, it's like boiling the ocean. And so for us, Traction just simplified. And it was like, look, just follow it. Just give it a shot. And with the quarterly check-ins and the annual planning, the meeting cadence, the expectations for how we're going to treat each other, the performance management, it's just simple.
So and performance management, when you review your employees, do you kind of review them based on the core values like Traction says too?
Yep.
That's cool.
So we, you know, the core value stuff, you kind of have a feel for.
Oh yeah.
We have the quarterly check-ins, but you know if someone's not hitting those things. And so typically quarterly, if everybody's good on core values, they're short, little cup of coffee conversation. Hey, can I help? What's working? What's not working?
That's good.
But, you know, every once in a while, especially with the work from home thing, you know, you got some folks that took their eye off the prize a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the make it happen wasn't there. We were missing some deadlines. The self-propelled wasn't there. Nobody was speaking up when they had bandwidth. They were like, I'll wait till be told. You know, I imagine someone will reach out to me if they need me. And it wasn't that we didn't trust them to be doing great work if they had it to do, but they weren't. If they were sitting in the office, they might, you know, stick their head over the cube and say, hey, I got capacity. Sounds like you're bowed up. How can I help? And so stuff like that, it's harder to see sometimes.
Work from home is a big deal here too, because I manage accounting and I manage the kind of, just to be perfectly honest, I manage a female workforce who have responsibilities at home. And I always give them kind of the same advice that, sure, work from home, but don't be upset when you miss it. And it kind of sounds like C1S is a very similar kind of culture.
Yeah, yeah.
So what kind of advice do you give to kind of the younger women that join your company and they're like, hey, got to have a hybrid role. Hey, got to work from home 3 days a week. What do you tell those people?
You know, so we have a policy that says so many days dependent on your job. And like you guys, we're sort of high trust, high accountability. We're not going to micromanage you when you're in the office.
Mm.
We're for sure not going to micromanage you and can't micromanage you from home. But what we have found is that our young people do not grow. And so it's okay to say, I'm going to be hybrid because it's important for me to pick up the kids and the school's really close, but I'll get right back online. And I have no doubt that they do. But you aren't hearing and seeing and feeling the same urgency, nor are you getting the same visibility for your work. You can crank some stuff out. You can be very good. The books can be accurate every single month, but you are kind of behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And you got to know career growth doesn't come when you're hiding. And being visible, and it doesn't mean walking to the office and tell everybody how great you are, but there's a piece of visibility about your growth when someone's saying, I'm looking for someone with a lot of tenacity. I'm looking for someone who always does X, Y, and Z, or is just so capable and takes on more. That's difficult to see from home.
Is.
And so I would just caution those folks to say there's, you know, maybe this age and stage of your life, you got young kids, that's super important. You're prioritizing that. Great.
Yep.
But you got to know that comes with a little bit of a, you know, a slower pace on career growth.
Okay. Yes, that's exactly right. So, you know, everybody always wants to talk about how, you know, they look around the boardroom, they look around at the C-suite, and there's never, you know, there's only one woman, or there's not enough women, or there's no women. And everybody's like, you know, what do we need to do to change this? And it's like, well, look, I'm happy. If you want to stay home with your kids, man, that's great. I love that for you. I didn't have that ambition. But understand that there's going to be a huge gap when you decide to come back 10 years from now. Everybody's already passed you up, and it's going to be very hard for you to make it to the top after that. And if that's not important to you, then go take care of your family. Yeah. I love that for you. But if you want to get to the top, you're not going to be able to do it from home. You're just not.
No, that's for sure.
Okay, back to traction. Like, what do you think that when you think about traction, you're like, if nothing else happens, we have to do this every single time. Is that maybe the meeting pulse? Is that rocks? Like, what do you just really prioritize out of it?
We really prioritize level 10 meetings, making sure everybody is together.
Everyone in your company.
Everybody.
Oh, nice.
Has that's level good. 10. And as, you know, we try our best to do those in person. Because,
mm-hmm.
again, I think eyeballs and body language and laughing in person is so much better than laughing on your Zoom.
Oh, definitely.
We are 100% mandatory camera on for any meeting.
Good. Good for you.
So that's at least a step in the right direction. But those to us just help us stay connected. And not just for like tasks, but just like a segue. You know, tell me what you did this weekend.
Mm.
What are you most proud of in the last 90 days?
Yep.
Those kind of things get people laughing and talking and knowing each other better.
Yes.
And so for us, those level 10 meetings are, you know, and our rule is you got to be sick or on PTO. So those are your two reasons to not be.
Nice.
And, you know, if things come up, life happens, sure. But plan around your level 10.
That's good.
Don't book something on top of that level 10 and be like, oh, I can't make it today. It's like, well, you didn't prioritize well.
We've never had the buy-in for it. I mean, we do it, we follow it, but we don't have the buy-in because I would get really tired of people consistently finding something better to do during the L10. And I had to really figure out, like, do they just didn't see the value in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing that we really had a hard time with was solving issues in those meetings. We'd get through the employee headlines, the rocks, blah, blah, blah. We could see the issues and we kind of look around and nobody would want to solve anything. And so, you know, I kind of went back last year and I was like, why is that? Why does no one want to solve anything in this room? And I was like, maybe we don't all trust each other to solve these things.
Mm.
Like, have you ever run into that?
Yeah.
Where no one wants to solve any issues and no one feels like they can speak up? Like, what? How have you dealt with that?
Oh, gosh. Well, in most rooms, I'll be the first one talking. And so when I'm there, they're like, this is cool. I don't have to talk. Julie's here. So, in an engineering company, there's not a lot of those folks who are routinely speaking up to groups.
Ah.
But we had the exact same thing. And people just, they either the issue was a person or the issue was a thing that either they were a part of and didn't want to shed light on. One thing we just did recently was five dysfunctions of a team.
We did that too, yes.
And it is, you know, we're sort of in the honeymoon glow of that. And people are like, hey, I need to have some healthy conflict. You know, people are kind of digging in on it. Yeah. And I hope we keep it alive. I mean, that's the deal is to keep that thing alive because you do break through some things, especially when we blended this engineering company in with our folks. Everybody's playing so nice for a while. And then they may not be playing nice, but they're also not talking.
Yeah.
And they're not saying, hey, they did different work than we did. And there was some perception that we thought the work they did was less valuable. But that wasn't being, verbalized, but they were feeling it. And some of it may have been, in fact, they were feeling it correctly. But they weren't able to say it because they just didn't feel like that was a safe thing to say. And nobody wants to feel like they're doing work that's not valuable.
No.
But it does drive a big wedge between people who are supposed to be, drinking the punch and doing this stuff together every single day. And so we really, that five dysfunctions of a team has been a huge helper, and just that trust.
Trust is big.
Yeah. And again, you get back to, I don't trust a guy that I don't ever see.
Oh my gosh, I know you and I speak the same language on that.
And I'm not asking everybody to come to the office 5 days a week. Don't hate me. Don't hate me. I love work from home. It's a terrific perk, and technology has allowed us to do a lot.
Yep, that's true.
But it does not take the place of in-person. I mean, did you meet your husband at the altar?
I met my husband at work. So luckily, I was in the office.
Right. So you had met him before you married him.
Yeah.
You don't have a best friend that you've never sat in the same space with.
Yeah.
These are relationships. They don't happen over Zoom.
Yeah, that's so true.
That's just transactional. And it's fine. Totally agree. It handles some business and we can do some tasks, but it's not how you can build a company that's got a culture of people who are committed to each other and what you do together.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Okay, so when I looked at your LinkedIn, it said that you started at C1S in 2009, so you're 16 years into owning and operating a construction company. Mm-hmm. What do you think has been the biggest struggle? Just if you could look back over the years and you're like, oh, I almost didn't make it through that one.
Yeah.
What was it?
The biggest struggle, it has part to do with, working with your husband.
Yeah.
which is great when it's great. When it's great, it's fine.
Yeah. Amen.
But when it's bad, and business will go bad, everyone's will, and for reasons within your control and outside of your control, every business has hard times. But when you have hard times with your spouse, who's an entrepreneur and you're an operator, and you guys want to solve the problem totally differently, and there's a problem that you're just not going to get out of quickly. It's going to be lasting for 3, 4, 5 months until something turns around. And your whole livelihood depends on it. Mm. That's all you've got. And I can't go home and bitch about that guy.
Yeah.
And home doesn't feel great. I'm like, I don't want to talk to you at the office either. Because we got into it last night at dinner.
Yeah.
And, so that has been the hardest thing. Like 2018, we literally almost lost the business. And
really? Why?
We were approached for an acquisition, okay. And in all that due diligence, we took our eyes off of our sales pipeline, and all of a sudden we didn't have backlog, and one of our key clients was doing a reorg, so they froze all of our purchase orders, and it's just all the things that happen
right.
at work, all the things that happen, and we got stuck. And so our first pulse is to, okay, we'll stop taking payroll for a while. Well, now we're personally strapped.
Yeah.
And now,
and
the solution wasn't coming fast enough for us to kind of recover from that. So then it was like, okay, how do we get financing? Okay, now we got to let some people go. And all those things, when you care about your people,
that's
letting
tough.
Them go because of something you did, that hurts.
Oh, yeah.
And so, it was a difficult time regardless. But it was a real difficult time to go through with your husband who is like, don't worry, we're gonna, it's probably, it's fine.
I know those
like,
people.
Are you looking at the balance sheet? Am I the only one here who's paying attention to what's in the bank?
Oh.
I don't know how you think that's gonna fix itself.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't that he didn't know. He just is more optimistic. Whereas I'm like, plan for the worst, hope for the best.
This is me and Garrett. Like okay. Garrett is, I will be like, oh my God, the world is falling. We are going to lose it all. And he'll be like, everything's going to be fine. And I'll be like, but this. And he's like, it's fine. I'm like, no, but really this. And
right.
it's almost like, I almost can't take it. I'm like, you're not seeing what's happening. But so I don't, so explain
yes.
this. Like you're still married. You still have your business. How'd you make it?
we dug in and figured it out. Just like you guys have every time you had that thought.
Yeah.
Y'all figured it out.
Yeah.
And whatever Garrett thought was going to happen to be perfect may or may not have happened, but something else did. And you're still here.
Yeah.
And so I'm grateful for those people. That's not me. It's not how I roll. But we wouldn't be growing if it were for me. I'd be like, no, we're fine. We've got some business. I'm making my mortgage payment. I think I got a 401k.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah.
But these people like Garrett and my husband and others, they pull this organization along. And what they also do is they make it look more exciting and challenging and rewarding. Absolutely. For all these young people coming in, all these middle-aged people coming in. They're like, they got something to sink their teeth into because opportunity's coming.
I completely agree with that.
And so without them, you know, we would have, you know, I don't know what would have happened. So yeah, it was a stressor.
But, definitely, there's definitely a type of entrepreneur. Like, they, not everyone is an entrepreneur, and the ones that are, like, it's just fascinating to be around them.
And it does make you realize, you know, all that diversity of thought. Sometimes I'm like, no, I don't need any more diversity. I want to do it my way because it's going to be fine and I'm right. So no more better ideas. Thanks. But you do realize people who think differently have a lot of value.
They do.
If it was just me running this show, we wouldn't be where we are. And so I have a huge appreciation for it. As crazy it makes me sometimes, I have a huge appreciation for it because, and I've saved their bacon a time or two. By some other version of my operator mindset.
Of course.
And so, but together, we're still doing this thing and it's pretty fun.
That's great. I want to pivot a little bit and talk about Texo. So you've been on the Texo board for 6 years. Tell me why Texo is so important to you.
Texo, you know, is the blend of ABC and AGC. So it's got specialty contractors and GCs. Okay. It's got industry members too. What I discovered was that Texo had always been around, but I think I just thought you went there for training.
Okay.
And or you went for a happy hour, and I was like, girl, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
I don't have time to be glad handing about. Yep. I just got work to do and a family to raise. But what I realized was as soon as I showed up there, all of a sudden my work got a little bit easier. Like I had a bigger network of people to ask good questions to. I got to solutions faster. I didn't, you know, boil the ocean trying to find the best CPA. I was like, your company's awesome and you're doing great. Who do you use? And then we would pick a CPA that it wasn't even on my radar.
That's right.
And so we just, I found that I had been, you know, I thought my value was just in grinding it out and making it happen every single day and just getting it all done. And I got to be so much more effective by meeting people who had done it or done it differently. And then opportunities come out of that, you know, and not just business. I'm not talking about we sell things to each other. I just mean we get the opportunity to participate in different organizations. We get the opportunity to talk like this. I mean, I would have never found you if not. I did love your video, and I did like it a lot of times. But
thank you.
But Melanie connected us, right?
That's right.
And
yeah.
So, and here I am sitting talking and learning from you about an ESOP and whatever else you've got going on.
Yep.
And so, you know, those things, right? That's how business happens.
I definitely agree.
Connecting people.
Yeah, I have really learned that, and I'm a natural introvert. Like, I want to be kind of in my own space, and I've learned that those networking events can be everything. I mean, I've met some of the most important people in my life at a networking event that I did not want to get dragged to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that organizations like Texo are so impactful for stuff like that. Okay, so you've been in construction, and you've been in Dallas your whole life. So how are you feeling about everything that's going on? You know, so we're facing tariffs, we're facing market instability. You know, I've never been through a recession. Everybody says this is a recession. Who really knows? What are you thinking the next 18, 24 months in DFW?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm a psychology major. Okay. How I feel about it is very nervous.
Right.
But my husband's in on the economics and looking at the forecast. And like you guys, y'all have diversified your business. We diversified ours.
Good.
If it all... You know, Dallas has been a great economy. DFW has been a great place to do what you and I do. I don't expect that it's going to completely dry up in any way, but I do imagine there will be some, you know, constriction in the market. I typically find that, you know, companies of our size and kind have the agility to survive those.
Mm.
Like, we just don't run fat. You know, we stay lean.
That's good.
We don't, you know, for better or worse, our projects are in sort of an environment that kind of keeps going. I mean, Frito-Lay is one of our best clients. And thank goodness America loves chips and soda, you know? And so we love those opportunities that have some stability on them. I try not to worry a lot about it because I don't have a crystal ball. My biggest fear is losing our people, you know, and the economy's hot and headhunters are calling your folks every single day and offering XYZ more. And that's when I get real nervous about the health of our company and our culture. And thankfully, we've withstood that pretty well. But things change and priorities change and people get excited by different little shiny pennies at different times.
Oh, always. So how have you dealt with that? You know, that's something we deal with every single day. I mean, our pipe crews will get an offer for a dollar more down the road and we'll have an entire crew just leave us. And we're really lucky to have the labor pool that we do. But, you know, what do you do when somebody you really care about goes and gets a bigger offer? Do you match it? How's that conversation go?
You know, it really depends on the person and their role. We try our best all the time to have market. You know, our goal is internally equitable, externally competitive, and the company's ability to pay. But in those moments, when someone comes around and offers a superintendent of ours, you know, $30,000 more a year, I could probably match it for a very short while, but I'm going to have to retract it.
Right.
But they are too.
Yeah.
They're going to pay you that till the job's over, and then the market just won't bear it.
Right.
And so if you want to make a short-term play like that, I can't stop you. It's your life. Yeah. That's good money. I wouldn't ask you to turn it away. But and if they're great, we say, hey, you're alumni.
Yeah.
You know, we're here. If we got an opportunity for you later, I hope that works out.
Okay.
So we don't, you know, if they're good, they're good, even when they choose to leave us. I can't pretend that we're the only great place to work. But you know, we do sometimes for technical roles or in the middle of a project or something's really tight, we just ask for more time. Just give us till this milestone, give us till, you know, the financial review's done, give us even, you know, our controller went and took another job, but she contracted with us in the transition, you know, and helped us with things. So we just try to get creative and not get our feelings hurt by it. You know, people don't work for C1S, they work for themselves. And their lives are important to them, and their choices, they don't make them lightly. If they do, they probably weren't meant for C1S because, you know, we're in it for the long game.
Well, that's a lot more mature take than I have. I mean, when we lose people, I'm just like pissed. I'm pissed.
Yeah.
How dare they go to – they choose someone else over what we're doing. I'm like, they just don't see it. They don't see the long term. They don't see where we're going, especially if they choose to not work with us at all. Like, we were looking for a general manager for – I don't know, five, 6 weeks on the heating cooling side. And we had this guy come in, and he strung us along for 4 or 5 weeks. And when he finally told us no, I was like,
I was pissed. Everybody else was super calm about it. But I was like, he just doesn't see it. He doesn't see where we're going.
Right.
We didn't bet on us. And I was like, so F him.
But
right.
What about that guy?
Well,
he just can't see it.
When I was 36, I did too. I did too.
So I'm going to grow out of that.
Yeah, I got 21 years of getting my ass kicked about that I stopped like getting all hurt by it. But
that's
it,
funny.
It is your baby. It's like someone just said, I don't love your baby.
Yeah.
And you're like,
that's exactly what it's like.
If you lost your mind, that's the best baby in the world. Look at this pretty baby. and it hurts because you're like,
yeah.
One, I needed you, but two, I wanted you to want this. And
yes.
Now you hurt my feelings.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah.
I know.
I don't have feelings, but yeah, that's exactly
you're
what happened.
Right, I bet. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now they're kind of down that path. You know, something that I think that it just a lot of women really have to struggle with is for women, not only do you have to be really great at your job, but you have to be likable.
Mm.
And I don't always succeed at the likability part. And I told you when we had lunch recently that I received a nickname. I was called the rattlesnake. And I was like, first I was so taken aback by it that I was like, what does that even mean? And they were like, well, you're so quick to snap, we don't have time to think. And I'm like, okay, well, all right. Well, I don't know what to do about that.
Mm-hmm.
But you shared kind of a similar story. So
yeah.
Kind of just tell me your path with being likable and how it goes for you.
Well, we terminated this guy. This one I was at TD, a superintendent that I worked with, and he was just impossible. I could not get him to commit and do. He always had a reason why he didn't do the thing that was supposed to happen, and always a great reason. It was like holding on to like a greasy water balloon. I was like, if I ask you this question, you squish this way, and I'm like, I cannot get anywhere. And I guess he felt my frustration with that. And so when we finally did get to terminate him for something pretty egregious, I got his phone because I had to check his messages. And in his contacts, my phone number was listed as the Black Widow. I was like, ouch. But then I was like, well, good read, man. I was not putting up with that stuff. And if you felt like I was coming after you, good read. Either rise up to that, talk to me about it, or move on. And so I don't get that way, generally speaking. I have some direct reports. Of course, they're women, and of course, they're awesome. And, you know, I don't think I have unfair expectations, but I try to manage expectations. But I don't have an unlimited amount of patience for just not doing the thing.
Yeah.
Like knowing the definition of done. Done is not the 10-yard line. Done is a touchdown. And so don't just get halfway. Don't sort of half-ass it. Don't send me something that's not done.
Yeah.
Like expecting me to finish. Like I need you to finish because I got my own stuff. And so, and that is, you know, like here lately, I'll get fried for this one, but, you know, our work from home, we have a policy. You got to be in the office 2 days. And I mean, I walk around that office and it's a ghost town.
Yeah. Oh, and that's tough.
I started like, sort of impromptu taking attendance. And then someone we did a survey, someone said, I feel like someone's taking attendance. I was like, whoops, good read. I mean, I didn't have a clipboard or anything, but I was walking around and eyeballing some stuff. And so I get frustrated when, you know, what is expected is not happening. I feel like we've been clear. And when people, you know, either take advantage of leniency or take advantage of, you know, maybe nobody's looking, I'm like, doing what you're supposed to do when nobody's looking, that's integrity.
I totally agree.
And I'm not saying any of the people that aren't coming in 2 days a week don't have integrity. Lord, crop that. But my point is, I do, if we set an expectation, if you walk through the office in a bathing suit, I'm going to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
If you come to work drunk, I'm going to talk to you about it. If you can't manage to get to the office 2 days a week, sort of consistently, I got to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be a hard ass.
Yeah.
You're just setting a clear expectation.
I'm trying, but it does not always get received that way. Then I look like the cop, or I look like I'm trying to micromanage, or I'm in someone else's business. I'm like, I just feel like we're being clear, and we're just not getting clarity back. So I don't have a good answer. I try to be light and likable, and even when I'm delivering someone's feedback, it's like, hey, man, you going to the beach today? Because we don't wear flip-flops. And I'll have some fun with it. But and I don't pick on everything all the time. I'm not walking around looking for problems. But it's humor goes a long way. And being vulnerable and admitting your own mistakes goes a long way. And then just being willing to be honest and sort of deal with a little cringy awkwardness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's it. Because a lot of times, even managers, they just don't want to, they don't want to make the direct feedback. You know, like they see the person wearing flip-flops and they're like, I'm supposed to wear flip-flops. But they're not going to directly like just kind of deal with the situation. So I think it takes a certain type of person to kind of be okay with setting the clear expectation and being direct. Because not everybody has that in them.
Yeah.
Some people would rather just like shy away from the situation than do that. So that's probably why you have made it as far as you have in your career, because you're okay with having that awkward moment.
I haven't always been. It's learned for me.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I have not always been. And I don't like making people uncomfortable. And I don't like correcting people.
Yeah.
And I don't like being corrected. I pretty much think I'm right a lot. And so that doesn't feel good to me either. So I get it. That's why I'm even more sensitive. But I think traction and accountability, you know, we used to sit in meetings and complain about our direct reports who did or didn't do something. And then traction comes along and they're like, that's your job. That's leadership, management, and accountability.
That's so good.
If your folks are not doing it, that it's on you. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, okay, well, I don't get to just complain about it. I got to do something about it. And so then you get better at doing it. It's never fun. Yeah. And you, generally speaking, you hire the right folks, they take it the right way.
That's
they
right.
Know. They're not like, well, that's a surprise. I didn't think flip-flops are a problem. They're like, yeah, I'm pretty much a big boy most of the time. I don't know why I wear flip-flops today.
Okay, I have a question for you, and I feel like this is something that's just kind of that I'm always curious about. It's totally off script, so you're not prepared for this, but as a business owner, how do you feel about sharing financial information with your team? Do you share financial information with your team? What level of financial information do you share? And the reason this is kind of a hot topic for me is I'm like a big believer in kind of a scoreboard. Yeah. I love a scoreboard. I love a metric. And like we made a goal this year that every department was going to have 3 to 6 metrics that they were required to hit, that they were aware of. And you know, and I'm like, we're going to broadcast this stuff. We're going to put it on the walls. We're going to put it on TVs. And I'm like, I've got all this sensitive financial information out there. And Garrett's like, whoa, you know, that's a fun idea, but I don't know that I'm comfortable sharing all that. So how do you feel about that as a business owner?
You know, we do operate fairly open book. We certainly have project metrics, right? So we say, oh, the engineering team did XYZ this month and this much profit. And this is, you know, utilization. We publish utilization, you know, not by name, but by business unit. And so some of that stuff, what we found works best is just roll it up. I mean, salary stuff and bonus
roll it
stuff,
up. Yeah.
Roll it up. And it's a big pool of people. So if that's what that is, you may know that you only got a little piece of it and you may be upset that others got more, but it's like, that's a good question to ask.
Yeah.
Why?
Yep.
And then there's some feedback that happens. And I hope it wasn't an oversight, but there's some feedback that happens.
That's good.
And so, you know, we've got some bonuses that are based on total company performance.
Good. Yep.
And so do we. So we, you know, like a fundraiser, you got that thermometer that's coming at you like October, November, December. How close are we to making this thing? And people are excited to see it.
And do you put that up somewhere to kind of help people gauge how close they're getting to this?
We do. We have quarterly conferences with our folks, and we're watching it, and we're telling if we're on track. But that's pretty high level financial data. We're not showing, you know, here's admin salary, here's construction salary. I mean, it's too easy to get in the weeds of that.
Okay, that's
sort of just condense it and roll it up into larger chunks of that stuff. And then, you know, when someone says, hey, I'm curious, how much does leadership team take home in bonus? It's like, well, that's confidential HR information.
That's right.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're an S Corp, and so all the profits flow through to the owners, and we got to pay taxes and all that stuff. And so there's not... nobody's doing anything egregious. Mm-hmm. We've got 6 owners in the company. It's all managed by the board. We've got to distribute stuff and hand out all the financials. People get to know.
Good.
They don't get to know how much I make.
Right.
They're not entitled to how much the leadership team took in a bonus, but they can see the financials, and it's like, here's bonus. That's yours and mine and everyone else's.
It's a very, you know, millennial kind of Gen Z idea that salary information should be out there. I don't think it should be out there either.
No.
I mean, I think that we can maybe put some metrics together, like, you know, let's show the project managers what we're spending on material every single month, you know.
Sure.
But I agree that as soon as you kind of get down, I'm sure that there are companies like that. They're like, I'm going to post every salary on the wall and I'm going to be good with it. But like,
yeah,
I don't know.
That,
you know, so many different people come in under different circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, you might have to go hire a PM over here that had 15 years of experience, and they're going to make more money than that other guy.
Yeah.
Like,
and now you got discontent. That doesn't
now
serve
you got
anybody.
That's the one thing that I think employees have the hardest time with, is when they don't feel like they're being fairly compensated.
Yeah.
And I don't know why people want to spend so much time talking about what the other person makes. Like, you know, we just had a situation just yesterday where somebody came and they were like, you know, a kind of a counterpart to what they do makes more money than they negotiate a higher salary when they came in. You know, I don't know what else to say about it, but they were just couldn't effing believe that they were being treated fairly because they do similar jobs. And it's like, man, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
You know, how do you deal with it?
So again, we try real hard to be internally equitable. I mean, the same person with the same experience and the same credentials and the same ability to generate revenue, there's no two identical people in this world.
That's right.
And they come from different places. And if someone's been trading up on jobs here in the last 10 years, you know, unfortunately, one of the best ways to get a raise is to get a new job.
Yep.
But they may not keep you very long, so you're going to be priced out.
Yeah.
And the economy will level set you. So, you know, don't put your house payment down on that inflated salary. But I think that we just try to be honest about it. And but we can't talk about what someone else makes. We can't talk about why they make it. We can say he's got, you know, so many more years or this much credential, or he runs this many projects a year. You don't run projects. He's independent in these areas where you're still learning. Here's how you can get there, and sort of, you know, help them feel that. Sometimes we just wrong and we need to make an adjustment.
That's right. Yeah.
Sometimes we're just wrong, and we can do that too. But the concern with that is, you know, then we get the water cooler talk of, well, hell, just go complain and you get the raise. And it's like, no, I don't have time for that. So, it's very much case by case, but we work real hard at comp. And it really does start with when you hire them, you know, unless you're in a real pinch and you need some heavy hitter for something specific. But that person's got to know they may not have a long-term thing unless they keep playing real hard.
Yeah, that's good.
It's just tough to market it.
Okay, last off-the-script question that's coming out of nowhere. But is some of your comp packages based on how well the project performs?
We have a variable comp program for that. So, yeah, we distribute a percent of the project profit to the project team.
Okay.
So what we want is folks to have like an incentive. Like I'm incentive, and some of it they don't get till after the warranty period's over. So it's not do a fast, bad job. Mm. It's do a good job. Mm. And
that's
manage
important.
Your money and manage your subcontractors, manage your schedule, and get the job done and have a happy client. And then after that warranty period, you get the rest of it. And so then they get this recurring mailbox money of they close this job this year, but they're going to get the last bit of last year's job. And that stuff just sort of starts adding up. And so that's our incentive program. So we had people coming in saying, I don't feel like I have any control over my financial destiny. I don't have. And that's when we instituted that just to try to give you back that autonomy. And so far it's been a great thing. And what we find is when we interview folks, they're like, we get a project incentive, but it's more profit sharing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it's not timely. We do it when you close the job, here's your first piece.
Okay.
You know, so it's a pain in the neck to pay them quarterly, but that's a bit of an incentive. It needs to be timely. It needs to be tied to the great behavior.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know, great outcome, celebrate it, provide
the psychology degree paying itself off.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad. Sorry, didn't look good at the time.
Okay, Julie, you and I both have a big night planned, so we're going to wrap up here. But thank you so much for coming on. I've enjoyed this conversation so much.
I loved it. I hope there's a part two coming.
Definitely. We will get part two scheduled.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. I enjoyed it.